The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, I'm going to lay out a scenario for you. So, let's imagine that you are celebrating an national holiday in America that sometimes happens in this month, and you are maybe meeting some family for the first time, like say your partner's parents or something like that. You can get the scene, right? So you're kind of at this social function and you feel like you're wanting to interact well and make a good impression and learn about them and have them learn about you. And you've brought with you your mindfulness practice. So you're having a great day noticing your body and your breath and maybe even your emotions and thoughts. And you've got this kind of, maybe not every moment, but you do at least remember now and then to be aware of what's happening as it's happening. And things are kind of going along, and you've even noticed that you're able to remain calm and equanimous during some things that are happening during this kind of intense family encounter. And in fact, in particular, you notice that when you get to the pie, it is the worst pie you have ever tasted. It's so bad. But you have mindfulness, so you don't show it, and you just notice unpleasant sensation, repulsion, these kinds of things. You have these great notes going on in your mind. And so nobody's probably noticing. It's all happening internally. You're thinking, what a great practice this is. I can be aware of myself and really get into my internal experience. And then your partner's mother leans across the table and looks at you expectantly and says, "Well, how do you like my pie?" "Oh no, I have to speak. My internal practice is, where is it? I have to respond. I have to say something. How am I going to interact properly in this situation?" So this practice that we do here on the cushion is not very helpful if it isn't useful in external situations as well as internal ones. So, we're learning mindfulness meditation here on the cushion, and we've learned about how to be mindful of various internal things going on. But the practice of mindfulness, as you learned when you learned about the Eightfold Path, is something that includes all dimensions of our lives. Right, so it's about our interactions with others and our mental cultivation and the emergence of wisdom from following these paths. So that means in particular that our interactions with others can be held in mindfulness, and that would include the realm of speech in particular, which is the subject for our practice tonight. So wise speech or right speech, and that doesn't mean right like right and wrong. It means right like appropriate, like wise. So wise speech is actually a full step on the Eightfold Path. It gets its own designation because it's so important. We do it so much, and it has so much potential to bring harmony or to bring harm, right? We know we've all had the experience of saying something that we regretted or not saying something when we should have and then regretting that. Either way, right? Or missing something. We thought we were saying the right thing, but we had just missed a cue somewhere, and so then we felt bad. Things like that. So looking at our speech, being mindful of speech is a very important component of a happy life and of harmonious relationships. And then it also becomes a foundation for having a sound meditation practice because we're not spending a lot of time regretting you know, what could have happened, what should have happened. For sure, if we sow discontent and division and falsehood and deceit when we open our mouths, then probably we're not going to feel very comfortable, right? If you're speaking in that way frequently, it just leaves a bad effect in your own heart, not to mention everything that spreads out from that. But if instead we speak in ways that are harmonious, both in our own heart and among other people, then we're going to experience much more ease and joy in our lives, certainly. So fortunately, there are guidelines about, you know, ways that we can practice in order that our speech becomes more harmonious, more easeful, more connecting, and a little bit less of the type that we're going to regret. This is not an easy practice, but at least there are some guidelines that I'd like to offer that we can use to be mindful of when we're speaking. You know, is this happening in my speech right now? So there are kind of four main guidelines that are useful to know for wise speech. Wise speech is said to be true. So at the very top level, we're not saying things that are false, known to be false. If we didn't know, that's a different thing. But deliberate lies. And it's beneficial, so it has some help, some positive effect for the people that we're speaking to or ourselves. You know, it's useful in some way. And it's also timely, which means that it's said at the right time. We're not asking somebody to do something for us just after they've told us how exhausted they are. You know, that's kind of an obvious example, but there can be times where it's just not the right time to say something to someone. Or there's times when it's the perfect time to say something to someone, and we should speak at that moment and bring something in. So having that sense of timeliness. And fourth, wise speech is kind. It's spoken with the intention of kindness, with a heart of openness and friendliness. Even if we're saying something that may not be agreeable to the other person, you notice that nice is not one of these qualities necessarily. But even if we're saying something that may be hard to hear, that's true, that we have to say, and it's the right time, we can say it kindly. And of course, even if it's, you know, if it's something harmonious and beautiful, then we'll naturally want to say it kindly. So it's worth noticing that not all of these qualities have to do with the content of the speech. So truth does, you know, you're saying something that is true, and to some degree usefulness has to do with the content, but much of it is about the quality of the speech. So the other factors besides the particular words that you're saying. So speech itself is a comprehensive practice that involves our intention, our actual words, our body, because our body language has a lot to do with how our speech is received. So it's also a very integrated practice, and we can bring mindfulness, all the kinds of mindfulness that you've learned so far, of breath and body and emotion and thought. All of those feed into what kind of speech that we're doing. You might say, breath, what does that have to do? But you may notice that if you're speaking in a way that's a little bit harsh or divisive in some way, it changes your breath. You may notice that. If that's not a dimension that's so relevant for you or so prevalent for you, that's okay. But if you like watching your breath, speech, it does still affect. So you might say, okay, great, I would love to learn wise speech. These four qualities sound great, and I know I don't do them all the time. So how does that come about? And fortunately, the way to speak in this manner more often is to be mindful. It helps to be mindful of three areas in particular, and these are not canonical areas, they're areas that I've found useful from my own experience. The first is the body, for sure. And the key there is to stay grounded. I loved the question earlier about this, that where we touched into it, because it's so true during speech. Speech often drives the energy into the head. And it's very, you've probably been in conversations where you could hardly answer your friend fast enough. You were going, yes, 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 shh, you know, really fast. And that energy is exciting. It ramps up. But it's not very mindful and it's not very grounded. And we may find that's a particular time when we may say something that we think later, that wasn't quite right, or say more than we wanted to say or something. So I find that it can be good actually to focus on my feet or on the contact points. If I'm sitting in a chair, on the, you know, my seat on the chair, that kind of thing. Very helpful when speaking. And at first it's hard. Like when I first intended to be mindful of my body during speech, I would remember afterwards. I would say, oh, right. But I had just spoken for 3 minutes straight and I didn't have any connection to my body during it. And it was so interesting to start to come into my body while I was speaking and learn, first of all, that that was possible, and to learn also what effect that had and how it was easier more often to be able to pause before I said the next thing, or be able to notice when the energy was rising or when I was veering a little bit towards, say, exaggeration or covering up something that I didn't want people to know about me. You know, oh, I don't want to appear that way, so I'll divert my speech slightly. And those things all manifested in my body in various ways that I became aware of. So I recommend that very highly if you want to practice mindfulness of speech. And then the second thing to be mindful of is your intention, which intention is a type of thought. And it's very helpful just to pause for a moment before speaking and ask, why am I about to say what I'm going to say? That simple question can really bring a lot of light to the realm of speech. So, for example, there are many motivations to speak, and many of them are good and some of them aren't so good, and you'll start to feel the difference. So, you know, there are good ones, like wholesome ones, like I want to connect with this other person, or I want to share something with them that I think will be helpful based on what I'm hearing from them, or I want to reassure them in some way because I notice they're a little agitated, something like that. But there are also things like, I want to manipulate this person in a certain way. You know, I want them to see something, or I want them to see something about me, or I want them not to see something about me. It's more about me, right? So there can be truly unwholesome motivations, like I want to sow division between two people. You know, it sounds blunt for me to say that. You would say, and when I say it that way, you might think, oh, I wouldn't want to speak that way. But there can be a little bit, sometimes in the back of the mind, if we're angry with a person, a third person, and we're talking to somebody else, we might be tempted to say a little dig about that third person because that anger is burning in us and we're not mindful of it. So noticing those little times when we want to deviate from speech that is true, beneficial, timely, and kind. And you know, it's okay if you notice, by the way, that you have these intentions that aren't so good. This is definitely not a practice of judging ourselves for what we see behind our speech, because you'll learn a lot about yourself if you ask why I'm about to say what I'm going to say. Instead, it's simply a matter of not acting on that intention. It's there, no problem, I'll just not act on that one. I'll act on the one that I feel is wholesome. And slowly, those unwholesome intentions will come less often if you simply don't put energy in them. So I just want to add that side note of not trying to manage our intentions too strongly while we're in the act of speaking. Just notice what's there, pick the good one, and go with that if you can. And then the third thing to be mindful of, besides your body and the intention, is the general mood that's present in your mind while you're speaking. This one, I think, is a little more subtle, so I would emphasize the first two. But as I was thinking about this, I thought this is really important also. I want to mention it. And I've noticed, for example, when I'm in a little bit of an aversive mood, meaning that I'm a little frustrated or a little annoyed, maybe I'm a little tired at the end of the day, so I'm a little cranky. When I have that mood going generally in the background, I'm more likely to say things that are a little bit negative, you know, that affects my speech. More often I will have intentions that aren't as wholesome. And sometimes, instead of looking directly at the intentions that are there, if I'm just aware, oh, I'm a little bit cranky right now, then I can kind of globally know that there might be unwholesome intentions coming in because of that and sort of correct it before I begin to speak. Generally, our mood might be sort of coloring everything that we're experiencing, and so we're more likely to have that attitude going into our speech. So mindfulness of speech is such a rich area of practice. I know I haven't done it justice in this short period of time, but I hope that it might be these tips might be something that's useful to you over a holiday weekend where you might be talking with a lot of people. So this is kind of where the rubber hits the road, right? We have this internal mindfulness that we've been working on, sitting by ourselves quietly when there's nobody talking to us, expecting things of us. And now this is a time to show some of that externally. How does that come out? And our speech is one way that it does. So may you have a wonderful weekend of mindful, wise speech. Thank you. Are there questions about the topic? Or, yeah, here's one.
Yeah, so going back to the pie. I recently saw a TED Talk for whatever it's worth, someone authoritative gave statistics that we tell a massive amount of white lies every day. So for the pie, the kind, timely, but almost truthful answer I would give is that it's like no other pie I've ever tasted. But I mean, seriously, otherwise, I mean, there's kind of a grading scale, so to speak, between omission and full truth. And so I always struggle with that balance. I mean, how do I look in distress? So many instances a day where we need to be kinder than we bias towards kindness and not full disclosure.
So is there a question there?
No, it's a comment that I always struggle with.
Yeah, it's not an easy area. That's, of course, why I presented that as one that's really challenging. And there isn't a set answer, to what to do in a situation like that, except to bring that best intention. That's my first response is to really bring that intention of, well, I want to say something that's true and also kind. And it'll depend a lot on your relationship with the person and the particular situation, who else is there. There's a lot of factors that come in. But you're right, it's not easy. Go ahead, did you?
Yeah, I have a very beginner's question as someone who's not familiar with Buddhism at all. That really spoke to me, pun partially intended. And I was wondering if you have any resource recommendations if someone wanted to learn more about what you were just talking about.
Today I'll talk a little bit about resources.
Did you hear that?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, so now we get a chance to practice right speech. We're going to break up into small groups. And maybe I'll add something that Kim didn't say. Actually, thank you, Kim. That was a lovely Dharma talk. Right listening. This isn't a specific thing that the Buddha taught, but just consider what would right listening be if you were to make that a practice. So we're going to ask you to get into groups of four. I think there's 12 of you, so three groups of four. And then I'm going to give you a question. And the way that we're going to do this is rather than having like a conversation sitting at Starbucks, so rather than natural, one person will give a short answer, and then the next person, then the third person, and then the fourth person, and then the first person again, because maybe somebody has said something that reminds you of something else and you can add. So just go round and around the circle, just giving very short answers. Yes, yes. So you don't. Then we'll see how the energy is in the room, and if it's appropriate, we'll ask a second question to keep going. So if you'd first like to get into groups of four, please. Okay, so one thing that Kim talked about in her Dharma talk is to help with mindfulness of speech is our intentions, kind of be aware of our intentions. So let's say that you have set the intention to bring goodwill and harmony or, you know, generally, what's the word I'm looking for? I'll just say goodwill and harmony. When you're in a group of individuals. So if that is your intention, what kind of speech would you use? So you can say specifically types of things that you would say, or maybe how your body language would be, or how you would listen, or these types of things you can talk about. If your intention is to bring goodwill and harmony into a group, what would you say? How would you listen? Those kinds of things. And I'll ring the bell in a few minutes. So you can just go around the circle. Thank you. Thank you. So So now for your second question is, I think many of us have this experience of, I don't know, Kim, if you coined this, but bonding through mutual outrage, where this kind of idea where we're all together against something else, but that's often not a wise speech. It's often not the maybe the most skillful way to be together. So if you find, here's the question, if you find yourself in a group where this is happening, this kind of mutual outrage, what are some skillful ways that you can respond that are true, timely, beneficial, and kind? So if you're in a group where they are, I keep on using this word outrage, right, but protesting about something, how can you respond without contributing to that in a way that's true, kindly, beneficial, and timely? Thank you. So we would just like to hear from some of you, either what that was like to talk about these things with others, or what was something maybe new that you learned or that you thought about in this, in the, your circles, in your groups. Maybe I'll jump in with some of the things that we came up with. It's funny that I'm saying this. It's kind of the end of the evening. I'm a little bit tired. And I remember, Jim, you said something. And I thought, oh, I have to remember that. And I totally forgot it. So, so now, because my mind is completely blank, do some of you have something you'd like to share?
Yes. Mentioned then. Take is trying to solve other person's problem, which is almost antithesis of trying to acknowledge their problem. Normally, it's interpreted as a denial of their problem. And yes, it was helpful to be reminded on what to do and what not to do. We'll say.
Yes, yes. Problem solving, we often want to go there, but it's often not what is being asked of us.
Just from a format perspective, I thought it was kind of liberating to sort of take turns talking, because instead of the sort of like, oh, dude, I totally know what you're talking about, like the I need to get my point across type of conversation, I felt like, okay, it is my turn to talk, all eyes on me, and then it made it very simple after I had said my piece to say, all right, now my focus is going to be on Donna here, and I'm going to listen mindfully, as it were. So I thought that was kind of cool. I've never really had a conversation like that, you know? Not that I listen, but you know what I mean.
Yes. Yeah, thank you for saying that. It can be, I think you, did you say liberating?
Was that?
Yeah, it can be nice to not be in the kind of jockeying, I got to get my words in, you know, that's going to go around and around. And plus, it's nice to hear what other people have to say, right? We all have wisdom that we can share with others. Are there more comments? Yeah, sorry, one of our microphones is on the fritz.
I just want to say thank you for the comment about watching your body, because I found it really helpful. I noticed that when we first sat down, I was just so nervous about talking to, you know, new faces and what was going to happen, and I didn't notice how like scrunched in I was becoming, and as I was paying more attention, I could just feel my body relaxing and just opening up more, and I felt more calm, and I was able to see why, where the energy was coming from, and kind of don't worry. So, thank you for the advice.
Yeah, it's quite remarkable. I think the more we start paying attention to our body, what we learn, right? How it's kind of expressing our inner life, as well as if we want to feel more relaxed, we can take relaxed postures, not in that we're lounging, but maybe be upright and with our shoulders down, right, as opposed to up or something like this, and are looking forward instead of looking down or something like this. And that tends to be a little bit more relaxing. So it works both ways. Our bodies can affect our inner life, and our inner life affects our bodies. Maybe one more. Is there one more comment?
There was something about when we're all kind of getting angry about something and paying attention to the idea that some of it's just a story that I'm making up in my head and it's not necessarily the truth. And that resonated, definitely.
Yeah, that's quite, at least for me, it was a big wake-up call, and I realized, all my thoughts are not actually the true, right? Just because I'm thinking it doesn't mean that it's the highest truth. So I'd like to end this evening just with talking about a few resources that are available. First is, if you are interested, if you haven't, or you would like to again, the beginning meditation class will begin again, the 5-week class, I think January 7th is when it's beginning. January 8th. So it'll be a Wednesday nights. Yes. So that'll be for 5 weeks, starting on January 8th. And some combination of Kim, Diana, Jim, and Shin Kwan will be the teachers for that. I think just because of our travel schedules and work schedules, there'll always be at least two of us here for that. I also wanted to say that we've been going through mindfulness of breath, body, emotions, and then next week will be thoughts. And if you would like, there's a handout that goes with the intro course that describes those in a little bit more detail. So if you're interested in having something to read specifically, you can go to our website, the Audio Dharma website, Introduction to Meditation, and you'll find those PDF. I think they're called homework. I'm not sure why they're called homework exactly, but so you can find that there. That's a resource for you. I think there was a question about a book. Was that right? So I'll share my favorite book, kind of an introductory book. It had a big impact on me. And it's written in a very accessible style. It's called 8 Mindful Steps to Happiness. And it's written by Bhante Gunaratana. You spell his last name G-U-N-A-R-A-T-A-N-A. G-U-N-A-R-A-T-A-N-A, Gunaratana. He's Sri Lankan, from Sri Lanka. So that's just my own personal one. I can also say that Gil Fronsdal's book, Issue at Hand, which is freely available. If it's not out on a counter, we can find it for you, probably in the cupboards maybe. That's also, in my view, has great things in there. And maybe Kim and Jim, do you have some more resources you'd like to share?
Were you asking for resources just for understanding meditation in general, or
if there was anything
topic?
Specific on what you were talking about,
on speech.
Yes, so he has a chapter on speech.
Oh, cool.
In there.
Yeah, but those would be my recommendations too.
If you're interested in very technical kind of Buddhist things, no, okay, so. Okay, well, it's 9 o'clock, and I want to say thank you to everybody. It's lovely to see you, and tomorrow is Thanksgiving for those of you who are going to be with friends and family, or if whatever your day may bring you. I wish you a very good day, and hopefully we'll see you next week.